Welcome to The Political Scene, a show about current events and the political forces driving them. I'm Tyler Foggett, a senior editor at The New Yorker. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis won re-election by a stunning 19-point margin.
We reject woke ideology.
DeSantis seems well-positioned to run for president in 2024. He's questioned what he calls the huge underperformance of Trump-endorsed Republicans in the midterms, while touting his own brand of politics and his transformation of Florida. Is he the next leader of his party? My colleague, Dexter Filkins, has studied DeSantis and knows Florida well. Hey, Dexter.
Hey, Tyler.
Thanks for being here. So you profiled DeSantis in June, and I'm wondering what your impressions were of him at the time and how the DeSantis story has sort of changed since then. Like, did you expect him to win so resoundingly in the midterms?
It's pretty amazing. He's got this sense about him of just unstoppable momentum. I mean, he's a very intense person, and I don't know if that's his persona. I mean, he kind of walks like an athlete, like he played baseball in college, and so his chest is thrust out. He gives this impression of kind of supreme self-confidence and kind of forward momentum. But, when he won his first term as governor in 2018, there was a recount. He won by less than 1% of the vote. Close race against what I think is fair to say was a pretty weak candidate, because it was a candidate sort of from the left of the Democratic Party. And so to me, it seemed likely that this race was going to be close to the one he just won. And it was just a blowout. I mean, he just killed him. Charlie Crist, who'd been governor before. And I was surprised by the margin. I think what surprises everyone that I know, and I grew up in Florida, it's just how rapidly the state appears to be changing. It's just changing very fast.
And how is it changing? Like, I've read a few different things. Like, it seems like there's obviously been a lot of, Latino immigration into Florida. But then I've also been seeing that a lot of people have moved to Florida because of DeSantis and because they want to protect their children from liberal indoctrination and because they liked his COVID policies and whatnot. So, what are you seeing in terms of like demographic changes or just how the state feels differently now?
It does feel different. I mean, again, I grew up there. It feels like a different place to me. I think over the last few years, it's all of the above. It's all the things that you mentioned. I think all of them came together during the pandemic. And so you had DeSantis really distinguish himself nationally as being an outlier in the pandemic. And he kind of began by saying, we're not going to do all these lockdowns. They're harmful. We're not going to do mandates. We're not going to do mask mandates. We're going to keep the schools open. We're going to keep everything open, the beaches, the stadiums, everything. And that was in defiance essentially of everyone, and certainly of the prevailing wisdom and of the establishment, the scientific establishment. And he was angrily defiant. He projects anger as well, which I think we should talk about a little bit more, because he's a very angry guy. And I think he's channeling a lot of, I think, a lot of anger of his constituency. But I think the net result over the course of the pandemic was a real political victory for him. At the end of the day, or we should say in this case, at the end of the pandemic, the death rate in Florida, when you account for things like age and obesity, was roughly the same as the death rate in California, which locked everything down, which closed its schools, which closed everything for basically 2 years. Florida didn't close anything and essentially ended up with the same death rate.
Would you say that means that, DeSantis got COVID right? Or do you think that Florida is just a different situation from California and that you have a lot of older people who had some self-imposed lockdowns? Like my grandparents, live in Florida. They're sunbirds. They're from Indiana, but they, take their RV down to Florida and they're there for like 6 months of the year. And I know that they definitely, were ordering all of their groceries to their house and that kind of thing. And so maybe it was like a perfect state to not have a lockdown because you have this part of the population that just is already going to be safe.
It's a good question. I think to be fair to DeSantis, he was right about certain things very early. And if you talk to the people around him, it's not an accident. He's a very smart guy. He read the data, as much data as there was, and he came to the conclusion, for instance, very early on, he said, the thing that we have to do is quarantine the elderly. Mm-hmm. Basically, lock down the nursing homes, tell elderly people to stay in their homes, basically, because it's the elderly are the people we need to worry about.
So focus on that rather than making elementary school children wear masks, that kind of thing.
That's exactly right. And that's what he did. And so I think to his credit, he was absolutely right about that, that the elderly are the most vulnerable part of the population as regards to COVID. And he was right, I think, about not quarantining school children and keeping schools open, as we've learned sort of over the course of the pandemic. I think you got to give credit where credit is due. He was right about a lot of this stuff. I think what's interesting about DeSantis is that when you kind of tap into him and you watch him on TV or you follow him around when he's governing the state, again, it's this kind of super angry, argumentative posture where he's like pounding the table and he's basically at war with the liberal establishment. And so instead of kind of going, hey, you know, this is like really complicated and we're all having a hard time and like nobody really knows what to do here and I'm going to pick this way instead of that way, he's not doing that. You know, he's pounding the table saying, to hell with the liberals, to hell with the left, and to hell with the progressives. We're going that way. And everybody else can drop dead.
And is that like a smart political move in Florida specifically, or do you think that's the kind of thing that would appeal to a national audience?
God, that's the really huge question is like, can you carry this thing out of Florida? I have my doubts. I talked to a lot of Republicans in Florida about this very question, which is how did it work for him politically? And I think the answer is that angry rhetoric that you hear and see from him helped to mobilize, I think in this case, millions of people who had never really otherwise wouldn't have voted. It's people that the Republicans in previous elections have basically written off. Those are the crazies. We're not going to get those people. They're going to all stay at home in their trailer parks. And it was said with that kind of a certain level of contempt. And I think DeSantis has been able to mobilize those people. And so suddenly when he gets well over majority of the voters, it's because he was able to bring these people to the polls who've never been there before. And it's because of this really angry rhetoric. Does that work nationally? God, I don't know. I mean, I think anger doesn't work typically for presidential candidates in the United States. I mean, Richard Nixon was kind of angry. And you know, Trump was sort of angry, but like he also had this kind of clownish aspect to him, yeah, which kind of begged us not to take him seriously. And you know, and that he was kind of entertaining in that way. But like DeSantis is like angry, you know, he's pissed.
He's mad.
He's mad.
Has he always been like that? Or was that something that started with just like the nationwide response to COVID? Like, was he angry because he, you know, was reading the data and was like, we're taking this way too seriously and, you know, the economy's blowing up because of it? Or is he just like an angry guy?
That's a super good question. Is he an angry guy? I think my sense, and this was one of the most interesting aspects of the story, was many people who have known him for a long time. And I talked to people who he played baseball with at Yale, you know, around 2001, 2002.
If he has a tendency to anger, I feel like his baseball buddies would know best.
Yeah. Well, what they described was somebody, not necessarily who was angry, but somebody who's kind of detached and very remote and kind of hard to get to, not very sociable, not very affable, not warm and cuddly.
Doesn't really sound like a president.
Yeah, well, I think some of the people around him said to me, anger comes naturally to him. It's much more easy for him, mm-hmm, given that. There were people who said to me, for instance, you have dinner with Ron DeSantis and his table manners are kind of strange. He doesn't look you in the eye. He doesn't ask you about your kids. There's no chit-chat. He's just kind of all business and he's there at the table to get what he needs from you. And then he's going to move on to the next person. And like somebody said to me, very funny. Somebody said to me like, oh my God, like how's this going to work in Iowa when he's listening to the county chairman of the Republican Party, like drone on for 45 minutes during lunch, you know, like a plastic chicken lunch. And it's like, that's not going to work. And like you got to go and sit with people and like listen to their really boring stories about themselves. And I don't know if you can do that.
It's interesting because I feel like I've read so many DeSantis quotes, like, you know, woke is, you know, goes to die in Florida, these like kind of amazing slogans. But then if you hear him say it, I don't know. He doesn't really have that Trump charisma. Like, you listen to Obama speak and you're like, that guy has it. And you knew immediately. And I don't feel that way with DeSantis. And so I feel like that's been one of the more surprising things about his rise to me, is just that people do seem to be kind of captivated by him, even though he doesn't really remind me of like your classic affable, charismatic politician.
I mean, he doesn't. And
he's no Bill Clinton.
No, there's these moments with him in Florida that are just astounding. Like, I remember watching this press conference and there was a CNN reporter there, you know, CNN being in his eyes, I think the network of, you know, the Antichrist. And like, man, he just went after this CNN reporter.
If I could complete the question, though.
So you're going to give a speech, or are you going to answer, ask a question?
With all due respect, Governor,
you asked the question. I'm going to answer it.
I'm trying to finish my question.
No, you're giving a speech. You asked the question.
I am trying to ask you the.
You're going to ask how many questions? You get three.
He went after her and kept going after her and kept going after her, and he was a bully. Like, he was absolutely a bully. That's like really hard to see working nationally. You know, we're in this crazy period in American history where the country's terribly divided, and it's terribly divided over kind of the definition of America. You know, like, what is the story of America? And that used to be really clear. Everybody agreed on the same story, and like, people don't agree on it anymore. You know, so I think the constituency that he speaks for is defensive and angry and determined to kind of hold on to the old story. You know, I'm kind of simplifying, but I think that's it. And so they like that anger and they kind of identify it. And I think they feel a huge part of the population in the United States feels condescended to, and they feel like they've been kind of left out, not just economically, but I think particularly culturally, from the conversation. And he's channeling that. Trump tapped into that in a different way. But, you know, with Trump, it was like P.T. Barnum, you know, like, what's he going to do? And that, you know, that kind of helps, because, you know, you can't just have all doom and gloom and anger all the time. And so I think DeSantis is going to have to figure that out.
Yeah, I've been interested in Trump's nickname for DeSantis, which is DeSanctimonious, which is actually kind of a letdown. I feel like, you know, Lion Ted and some of those other ones have, you know, a better ring to them.
Sleepy Joe.
Exactly. Yeah. But I've been wondering if he's trying to emphasize to voters that this guy, that he's an elitist. I mean, he's, you know, Yale educated. Did he go to Harvard Law as well? I mean, maybe it's this invoking, you know, sanctimoniousness and, you know, pretension and that kind of thing, that maybe that's actually like a good strategy against DeSantis.
Well, it's funny. The DeSanctimonious thing, I think, like, went over like a lead balloon. Trump pulled it really fast, and I think because it didn't work for him, and because I think people liked Trump because Trump went after the establishment, but that's why they liked DeSantis. He goes after the establishment too. So it's like, what are you doing, like, trashing one of our people here, you know?
Can you be anti-establishment if you're like an Ivy League baseball player?
I swear, it's really weird, you know, like, but to DeSantis' credit, I think, I went to his old neighborhood. It's a working class neighborhood, little houses in Dunedin, Florida. When I drove up and down the street, it was basically Trump signs in the yards. I had a very nice and long conversation with his father, who I just, you know, I went up on a Saturday afternoon and knocked on the door, and he came to the door and in his shorts and t-shirt, his FSU t-shirt, and we had a great chat. But that, I think that's the world that he's from. His dad, like, installed ratings boxes for the Nielsen company, you know, the ratings company, over his whole career. He's like a working class guy. So he went to Yale. He went to Harvard. He served as a lawyer in the military. He has like the best resume you could imagine. So it's like he's got to sort of square all that, but he's definitely from the neighborhood for sure.
So you grew up in Florida, as you mentioned earlier, and I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about what it was like growing up there. And just, you know, I always thought that Florida was a swing state, and I'm wondering sort of what the culture of the place was when you were there, and, you know, whether what we're seeing now with DeSantis winning and also, you know, Rubio winning re-election, if like this is just like a really dramatic shift to the right, or whether this is something that was always sort of, you know, bubbling under the surface.
God, I wish I could answer that. That's so complicated. I think, I mean, I grew up in Florida. I grew up in Cape Canaveral, which is, you know, where they launched the rockets, but
yeah,
on the beach. And
that's like the coolest place ever.
it's a pretty cool place. And I worked for a long time in Miami, which is a very different place. And growing up in Cape Canaveral was the South, and it was a Southern state politically. And so everybody historically voted Democratic. But, you know, after Nixon in the early 70s, they started to go Republican. Miami is like incredibly interesting city. I mean, arguably the most interesting city in America, dominated by the Cuban Americans who are
Republican, right?
Yeah. Well, I think they get kind of a rap as being like crazy right wingers, but it's mostly they hate Castro and they hate the commies. But when you kind of take that away, Miami's an incredibly sophisticated, very interesting, God knows, very liberal, godless city. But, so the Cubans have always been, for me, kind of an anomaly. But I think what's happened in Florida, and I think what we saw happening in this last election when DeSantis won by so much, is that there was a big shift by the Hispanic community across the state, including the Cubans in South Florida, but also the Puerto Ricans around Orlando, who have historically voted Democratic. They're all moving Republican. And I think there's a lot of reasons for that. But the main reason is, and this is happening across the country, which is recent immigrants to the United States, but particularly Latino communities around the country. They're conservative culturally, they're patriotic, they're religious. So when they hear somebody like DeSantis, it speaks to them.
But I feel like when you think about like DeSantis's policies, I mean, I guess there's sort of like the conservative education stuff, or rather the banning of liberal education to some extent. But like, I mean, he's not going for an abortion ban in Florida, like some of the kinds of things that you think would, you know, really resonate with religious voters in that way. I mean, what is it about his, yeah, I guess like his platform that appeals to them aside from the COVID stuff?
I think it's mostly theater for DeSantis. He picks these issues that are super emotional, but they don't matter all that much. And so for instance, the kind of so-called "don't say gay" rule. It's like, well, you can't teach gender orientation to third graders. You know, like how many third graders were getting taught in gender orientation? I don't know. Like, I don't know, 12. I mean, you know, like 300. I mean, but it's not like it's not an issue that affects millions of people across the state, but everybody feels really strongly about it. And so DeSantis has this kind of genius for picking these issues like that. And he can portray himself as like, I'm standing up for, you know, good old fashioned American values. And I'm facing down the big bad liberals. And God, it works, you know, but it's not, if you take something like that, to me, it's like not super consequential in the way that like COVID was, or the way that his economic policies are, or the way that his abortion policy is, which is all of which are very moderate. He's been very careful, particularly on the abortion question, not to anger people on the other side of the aisle.
What's the policy in Florida again? Is it 15 weeks?
I think it's 15 weeks, yeah. Which is like,
I think that's what it is in Europe.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's not, it's obviously not super liberal, but it's not super hardcore either. And I think there's definitely pressure on DeSantis to move to a more stricter ban. And I think he's stayed away from that very carefully.
What do you think of his like response to Hurricane Ian? He, you know, has been getting funding for all the communities that were destroyed in the hurricane so that they can rebuild. And, you know, this is something that has been praised by a lot of people, but there were actually a lot of experts who said that, you know, the smart thing to do isn't necessarily to rebuild these communities, but rather to relocate them and basically just make sure that there doesn't continue to be property development in these areas that are clearly vulnerable and, you know, just like at risk of being hit again. This is also despite the fact that DeSantis was like anti-hurricane relief after Sandy. Basically, this whole thing has made me wonder whether DeSantis actually has gone about smart policies when it comes to protecting the people of Florida, or whether he does a really good job of like taking these incredibly hot button issues and creating the impression that he is looking out for Floridians while, you know, adopting these policies that aren't necessarily like the smartest thing that you could do in a situation like this.
Well, I think first you mentioned the crucial bit of hypocrisy there. He was, DeSantis, I think, was opposed to, and I believe voted against federal relief aid after Hurricane Sandy on the grounds that it was, you know, socialistic and a government giveaway, et cetera, et cetera. But he's been happy to take the federal disaster relief aid for Florida after Hurricane Ian, for understandable reasons, because huge parts of the state were just decimated by the storm. I think he's facing, the whole state, really, the whole country is facing a really big issue along the coasts, which is, what are we going to do in a place like Sanibel Island, which, for all the listeners who haven't been to Sanibel Island, it's an incredibly beautiful place, absolutely destroyed by Hurricane Ian. What do you do with Sanibel Island? I mean, do you rebuild the $4 million house with federal aid, taxpayer aid? And I think what's happening in Florida, and there's a special session of the Florida legislature, which is meeting next week to discuss this. We're getting to the point where private insurance companies are not willing to underwrite Florida homes that are along the coast anymore. And the end point of that, logically, is if you can't get insurance, you're not going to be able to get a mortgage. What's that going to do to the property market? These are gigantic kind of existential questions that are facing basically everyone that lives in kind of coastal America, but particularly in Florida, because of like where it is and in the tropics, and because those storms are just going to keep coming.
I guess like one of the things that I was sort of getting at there is whether he, like, is he actually an effective governor, or is he just really good at saying the kinds of things that give off the impression that he's an effective governor?
I think that Governor DeSantis is the beneficiary of a very robust economy in Florida. And I think he gets some of the credit for that because he kept the state open during the pandemic. The economy basically never lost a step when everybody else was shut down. But at the same time, I think DeSantis is and has been a beneficiary of the incredible migration to Florida, economic and demographic and personal, that have happened over the last 50 years. Ever since the 1970s, an average of 800 new residents arrived in Florida every single day. And that has been true every day since the 1970s. And so you've got this extraordinary kind of tide of people who are coming into the state with their money, with their resources, opening businesses. Businesses have relocated to Florida. And that's, you know, that's just this extraordinary tide that's happened over the last 50 years. And that's tended to kind of lift the Florida economy up, no matter what the circumstances are otherwise.
We'll have more with Dexter Filkins in a moment.
Hi, it's David Remnick. If you're enjoying this podcast, you might enjoy even more of what The New Yorker has to offer. Becoming a subscriber gives you unlimited access to The New Yorker, including Pulitzer Prize-winning reporting, insightful cultural commentary, and fiction and poetry. You'll also enjoy our delightful cartoons, crossword puzzles, narrated stories, and much more. This past year, our readers were gripped by Ronan Farrow's profile of Elon Musk, Heidi Blake's extraordinary tale about Dubai's runaway princesses, and much more. Visit newyorker.com to gain access to all this and more. Use the code POD15, P-O-D-1-5, to secure a 15% discount on a yearly digital subscription. That's POD15 for a 15% discount.
So to what extent do Floridians or Florida voters seem to connect with Trump? Like, I'm curious about, you know, Trump, who, you know, spent so much time at Mar-a-Lago and I think even announced his presidential run in 2024 from Mar-a-Lago, like whether you think that we're going to start seeing more of a split between the people who, you know, go for DeSantis versus the people who go for Trump, and whether in the past there's been, you know, a ton of overlap between those two cohorts.
Huge overlap.
It's like the same group of people.
It's the same people. I mean, I think DeSantis.
But they can't be now, right?
They can't be, and they're going to have to choose, and which is so interesting. I think what you're seeing right now is the inevitable splitting of that constituency, but also just kind of a fight to the death between DeSantis and Trump, because it is the same constituency. Trump got them first. They were Trump's first. He mobilized them, and DeSantis kind of piggybacked on them. But now DeSantis is trying to take them and run off of them. And I think DeSantis has calculated that basically Trump's moment has come and gone, and I can do this. And so I think the question is going to be like, when does that moment happen? When the switchblades come out?
Yeah.
and I suppose it's possible that it won't happen. You know, that Trump will just fade, which seems increasingly likely. But I think it's, you know, we might really have a moment where there's a showdown between the two. And if there was a vote today in Florida, say a Republican primary were held today in Florida, like who would win, like Trump or DeSantis? Boy, I don't know. But they wouldn't all get the votes. It would definitely split that constituency, which is like increasingly important to the party.
Yeah, that's interesting that you think it would that it's still kind of a toss up, because if you look at like the national polls, it seems like support for DeSantis is, you know, among conservatives is, you know, way higher than support for Trump.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true. I think that certainly among the party leaders and among kind of educated Republicans, you know, even ones who voted for Trump, they look at DeSantis, and this is DeSantis's appeal. They look at DeSantis and they like he's got the anger. He's willing to like fight the same fight as Trump. He wants to take on the liberals in the Northeast, and we love that. But he's not like a whack job like Trump is, and he's disciplined. He's really smart. He works really hard. You know, this is a guy we can do business with, and that's what they see in DeSantis, which is a kind of a guy of Trump's anger and temperament, but he's just a lot more disciplined and a lot more serious. That's why they love him.
That's interesting, because I feel like all the quotes from him that you see kind of circulating are about him just kind of going, you know, hard after, you know, wokeism and liberal indoctrination in schools. And they kind of seem like extreme quotes. But has he sort of successfully managed to make it seem as though like he is like sort of the rational, moderate one, and it's the other side that's just like full of, you know, liberal whack jobs? And so like when I you know, criticize them, I'm actually, you know, just like a moderate Republican who's reasonable and kind of seeing through all of this?
No, it's a good question. I wouldn't say he's moderate, and he doesn't come off as moderate. He's definitely from the right wing of the party, but of course the party's moved to the right over time as well. I think what's impressive about DeSantis, and I think what they like about him, say the party leadership and educated Republicans, is like he's extremely articulate. Like even when he's going after the same boogeyman, he speaks in complete sentences. His paragraphs are very coherent. He makes his points very clearly. He's really effective, and he's not eloquent. He's not a terribly charismatic speaker, but he's really clear and he's really forceful. And again, with Trump, you know, he starts the speech at A and then you're kind of wander all over the map, you know, and like you end up at Q and then you're like back at B and then down to Z. And it's like, where are we going and what's the speech about? And like, I think that's what's appealing to him, which is like, this is a smart guy. But I think the party's moved to the right. And I think DeSantis reflects that, which is there's a huge constituency in the Republican Party for kind of fighting the culture war, for going after the kind of cultural elites in this country, which by and large Republicans feel have captured the major institutions in the United States and have kind of run off with them. And so they want somebody who's going to fight that fight. And I think they look at somebody like DeSantis and they think he'll just be better at it.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. What do you think that DeSantis wants?
I mean,
aside from, you know, being president and, you know, being like the leader of his party, I mean, did you get the sense during your reporting that he has any like deeply held beliefs? Because, I mean, for so many Republicans, as we were talking about the abortion issue earlier, and like so many of them, you know, have kind of made that a big part of their platform. And, you know, abortion is murder. And, you know, it's like this very like this kind of like religious crusade. And I don't know if I really get that vibe with DeSantis. It seems like he kind of just wants to win the argument sometimes.
Somebody just on that particular point about abortion, somebody close to him said to me, he's not going to like go to the wall for that on that question. He's just not going to do it. And he's definitely not going to burn a lot of political points over abortion. But I think what does DeSantis want? He definitely wants to be president. I mean, I think that's absolutely clear. He's hugely ambitious. But like, what does he want? Yeah, like, what is he willing to go to the wall for? My sense is that he is fundamentally a kind of libertarian, kind of small government conservative, and believes in that. And as do you know, most Republicans, I think, kind of very limited government, kind of lower taxes. And I think that's the traditional Republican vision. Mm-hmm. Now, I think the tricky part here is that for him and other Republicans is that there's a kind of fundamental contradiction inside the Republican Party, which is you have people like, say, DeSantis or the traditional leadership of the Republican Party, whether it's, you know, Marco Rubio or Mitch McConnell. They believe in small government, lower taxes. You know, if businesses do well, everybody does well. It's the kind of old style Republicanism that we know, dating all the way back to, you know, Herbert Hoover. But their constituency's changed, and their constituency is less educated and less wealthy. It's not the Chamber of Commerce crowd. So their speeches are still for the Chamber of Commerce group. They're still like for the Rotary Club. But the people that they're talking to are very different. And so that's the contradiction. And a lot of people see in that an opportunity, which is like whatever Republican politician could kind of square that circle and kind of capture the working class in America or the white working class in America, that party's going to dominate American politics for a long time to come.
Have you been, I guess, surprised by anything that he's done since Trump announced his campaign? Like, how do you think that he's managed that whole situation and Trump just sort of coming out against him so vehemently? That kind of unhinged note that Trump put out after the midterms about, you know, DeSantis and I forget exactly what he said, but it was extremely critical.
Well, I think, you know, DeSantis is in a great place right now. Like, he just won landslide victory in Florida in an election in which Republicans didn't do very well around the country. He won big. So it's like, this is the way forward. And he's surging in the polls everywhere across the country in any kind of polls you see for the presidency. So my sense is that he believes, and I think a lot of people around him believe, that Trump's moment has passed. That may or may not be true, but they, I think they believe that Trump's moment came and went, and now he's just kind of flailing around, and nobody's really taking him seriously anymore, and kind of he'll be gone soon. And so I think their sense is the best thing we can do is just kind of sit back and wait for Trump to implode.
Which is kind of nice if you're Ron DeSantis, just sitting back and waiting for the inevitable, you know?
He's in a remarkably good place right now. In his campaign pack, he still has tens of millions of dollars that he could now use to run for president. He's ready to go. And I, you know, he's as I'm told, he's begun talking to people about foreign policy and things that presidential candidates start to think about. Who haven't dealt with issues like that. He's pretty clearly like gearing up. And of course, Florida is one of the largest states. And so he comes from a kind of, you know, all but guaranteed to get those electoral votes in a presidential election. So he's really starting from like a super strong place. And so I think the question is, if it's not Trump, who could knock off DeSantis for the nomination? And at the moment, like everybody else looks much smaller.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Dexter.
Thank you so much, Tyler. Thank you.
Dexter Filkins is a staff writer at The New Yorker. You can find his profile of Ron DeSantis on newyorker.com. This has been The Political Scene. I'm Tyler Foggett. The show was produced by Michelle Moses with help from Sydney Cobb. We had engineering assistance from Gintis Norvilla. Our executive producer is Stephen Valentino. Our theme music is by Allison Layton Brown.